Welcome to The Warcast, your geopolitical briefing that tells you what you need to know, when you need to know it. The Warcast is for War on the Rocks members only. Spread the word and tell your friends and colleagues to sign up at warontherocks.com/subscribe.
The Government Accountability Office just released a report on the Department of Defense's Global Train and Equip program. I'm speaking with Stephen Tankel, Associate Professor at American University's School of International Service and author of the new book, With Us and Against Us, How America's Partners Help and Hinder the War on Terror. Welcome back to the Warcast, Stephen.
Thanks, Jason. Always great to be here.
Let's begin with an overview of the Global Train and Equip program. What is it and what are its objectives?
Sure. So the Department of Defense uses the Global Train and Equip program to provide training and equipment. Sometimes it will also do small-scale like military construction activities, essentially to build the capacity of partner nations' military forces so that they can conduct counterterrorism operations. Now, that primarily means conducting those operations in their home countries, but it can also mean participating in them or supporting ongoing coalition or stability operations activities that might be taking place elsewhere. And I should note that although this is primarily talking about land-based forces, the DoD has also sometimes used Global Train and Equip to build maritime security forces for CT operations, or border security forces is another area where you get a focus. So often we're talking about forces that are able to do counterterrorism raids and those types of operations, but sometimes we're also talking maritime or border security.
And just to be clear, does this coincide or complement things like defense institution building, or is this sort of separate and on its own?
I mean, ideally, this should be integrated with defense institution planning. In practice, what this largely entails is building forces CT capabilities out in the field. So this is one of the criticisms historically has been that the United States is too tactically focused and that it's not doing enough in terms of institution building. Theoretically, this could allow for that, but in practice, the focus is still primarily at the tactical level.
Well, let's talk about the practice of the program. How does it work in practice?
Obviously, it's going to start with the planning phase, where there's going to be a determination of what objectives the United States has vis-a-vis a certain country. There's going to be a baseline assessment, where there should be a baseline assessment of what their current capacity is, what their absorption capacity is going to be, determination of how certain training or the provision of equipment, or in some cases, what is called an advise and assist mission, where you're going to have advisors embedded, and there may be assistance provided in the form of what are called operational enablers, be it medevac or intelligence support from drones, what have you, how that's going to serve U.S. interests, as well as whether the country in question is going to be able to absorb it. And then you will have a deployment very often of special operations forces, although we now have stood up security assistance brigades as well, that are going to go provide the training, work with the local partner in terms of how they are going to use whatever equipment is going to be provided, as well as whatever tactical training might be given. And so that's what it'll look like downrange. Now, in some cases, you're going to have continuous ongoing training for the same unit over time. One of the problems has been often you'll have people cycling in and out of a unit. So the objective in theory is to have continuous training, and in practice, you're actually training new people on the same stuff rather than being able to build on it. That's where human resources and institutions come into play. Of course, all of this is intended to be moving towards making these forces ultimately able to work on their own, right? By, with, and through means initially we do it sort of with their, we're doing counterterrorism with their permission, while training them, then we can work through them. Then we can work with them. So we're doing it in combination. And then ultimately we're doing it through them, which is we're providing support and they're doing the operations.
So the new GAO report assesses the project planning under the program based on requirements from the 2015 National Defense Authorization Act. You know, What did they look at and what did they find?
Sure. So they're looking at a couple of those things that I had been mentioning at the outset in terms of planning, right? To begin with, are the objectives stated and clear? And there the answer is, for the most part, yes. DoD has done a good job of making sure that they include project objectives, which really is, important and also the bare minimum that they could do, right? Every project should have objectives. They haven't done as well in terms of the other three elements. You heard me mention baseline assessments. Most proposals that were put forward in 2016 and 2017, according to the GAO, which is, the second, another of the four elements they were looking at, had baseline assessments. In terms of the third element, absorptive capacity, there was a considerable increase there, from 32% to 84% from 2016 to 2017, which is great, but 84% still isn't 100%. And then finally, fewer than three quarters of the projects that were looked at had sustainment plans. Now, what DoD would say is that in not all cases were these projects supposed to be sustained, so you don't necessarily have to have a plan for sustainment. The counter question to that, which the GA report doesn't really ask or answer, is why are you doing projects that don't necessarily need to be sustained? What's the nature of these projects? How much do one-offs, as it were, really serve U.S. interests? What does that, where do those projects that you're doing fit in to the wider picture? Having seen some of these plans, that have been shared with me by journalists and others, it may be, and I'm speculating, that the sustainment plan, that the projects that didn't need to be sustained were construction activities or something like that to enable further training, which is all well and good. But again, the question then becomes, is the training that you're going to be doing there definitely going to happen? Or if equipment's going to be stored there, is it definitely going to be provided? How are these sort of one-offs fitting into a longer-term plan?
Can you speak at all to, what level are these projects being planned at? Is it something that's being done at the COCOM level, at the country team level? And I don't know if the GAO report gets this or if you can speak to it, but what is the distribution globally of these projects? Where are they clustered and focused?
So the COCOMs and country teams are all going to be involved in the planning process, or they should be. The global distribution, the GAO report doesn't, to my recollection, and I just read it yesterday, so I should recall, get into the precise laydown of where all this is taking place. But from a counterterrorism perspective, we're talking Middle East, Africa, and a bit of South and Central Asia. I think the other question, right, is not just sort of what the planning looks like or where it takes place, but to your previous question, I should add on to that, the question of, are there real planning deficiencies here? And are these the right things to be looking at in terms of how we assess the effectiveness of these plans? What the GAO report is looking at are some of the metrics that were laid out in what is called Presidential Policy Directive 23, which tried to bring a whole of government approach and a more methodological approach to doing security assistance to make sure that security assistance was also done in a way that respected rule of law and governance and that actually contributed to building in those areas, and that we were building civilian security sector capacity as well as military security sector capacity. Now, obviously, this report is looking at the DoD side. That's a lot of throat clearing to get to sort of the core of the issue, which is these are all important indicators that we need to look at, but they are not the sum total of what we need to look at. We need to look at how these plans fit into a wider counterterrorism effort in a country. We need to look at how they align or don't align with what we're doing on the civilian side. We need to look at whether there's a potential for them to conflict with or pollute civilian efforts. We need to look at whether those objectives, which all of these projects have done a good job of laying out at the outset, are achievable and over what time horizon, and what are the metrics that we would know that we're on the way to achieving them. So the metrics that are looked at here in terms of absorptive capacity, baseline assessments, and sustainment plans are necessary, but they're not sufficient. And one of the things that DoD has been working on doing that this doesn't really get at, this report doesn't really get at, is, you know, because it was probably outside of the parameters of what was directed, is how does security cooperation, which includes CT cooperation, you know, what is the theory of change and what are the metrics by which we know we're having success or not having success? And to me, that's where the rubber really hits the road. All of this is important, but sort of without that broader context, it's hard to know what to make of these findings.
So my final question exceeds the scope of the GAO report, but you're just asking for your assessment. Does this global train equip program do what it intends? And if not, you know, what needs to be done to cover that gap?
Does the Global Train and Equip program do what it intends in terms of building the counterterrorism capacity of partner forces? Yeah, in the way that counterterrorism capacity is defined currently, which is, are these forces going to be better equipped to go out and capture or kill terrorists? Are border guards going to be better equipped to guard their borders? Are maritime forces going to be better equipped to work, you know, to work in a maritime environment through a narrow counterterrorism lens? Listen, the record's not perfect. See Mali, but you know, the record is okay. I think the bigger issue is whether or not that is sufficient for what we need to do for counterterrorism to be effective. And I think that goes back to your earlier question about institution building. It goes back to those points I was making about situating our military training efforts within a wider country effort. It goes back to making sure that when we are doing training, that we are not just training people sort of to be tactically efficient, but we are also professionalizing forces. Because where we're not professionalizing forces, and where it's really quite hard to tell because the GAO report doesn't get into it, of whether the Global Train and Equip program has made improvements, we've seen those forces fall apart. Again, see Mali, see Iraq. So again, it's a mixed record there at best. I think there have been improvements in the program, but this is hardly a panacea.
Great. Thank you so much, Stephen.
Okay. Thank you.